Chapter 16. Molly was getting ready to leave the office at around 6, when Jesse called to tell her that the 8:30 flight from West Palm was booked, and that he'd made a reservation on the first one out tomorrow morning. He'd called earlier to give her Paul Hutton's full name. Molly told him she would run it through the National Crime Information Center before Jesse got the chance. See if she could find a date of birth and driver's license if he had one, and even a last known address before the apartment above the barn on Appaloosa Trail, especially if someone anywhere in the country had reported a Paul Hutton missing. She'd had success using NCIC before, and knew she might know as early as tomorrow how many hits there'd been on the name, just in Florida alone. She was excited at the prospect, at the chase. Molly knew how good Jesse was at police work, even when it was a grind. But she knew she was good, too, and getting better all the time. She was a work in progress, same as her boss. "Provided it's the guy's real name," Jesse said. "You know you're getting more cynical as you get older, right?" Molly said. He made a snorting noise at his end of the phone. Hardly breaking news. "I'm Catholic," she said. "We come by it naturally. What's your excuse?" Michael was in the middle of the ocean somewhere. He had asked her before leaving if she was going to mind him being away for as long as he would be. She told him that if he didn't do this race now, he might never. He told her again how much he loved her. She knew she loved him the same way, but still wondered, all this time into their marriage, if they'd both become complacent. Another night for Molly in the house alone. She was getting used to cooking, for one, the way single women did all the time. But it was different with Molly. She had never been a single woman, not really. She and Michael had started going steady in high school. She'd never had a serious relationship with any other man in her life, even when they had tried seeing other people. Maybe that was the problem, if it even was a problem. She was feeling more and more like a single woman lately. Sometimes, when she was alone, she worried that she was just like Annie. Maybe she wanted to kick up her heels, whether she could admit that to herself or not. Jesse was right. The things you fixated on when you spent too much time alone. She defrosted a leftover turkey burger and indulged herself with waffle fries and put together a small chopped salad with romaine, feta, cucumbers, and a garlic dressing she could buy only online. She set the kitchen table for one, poured herself a glass of Whispering Angel, and ate dinner while watching the CBS Evening News on the small TV set on the counter. Nora O'Donnell was the anchor now. Sisterhood, Molly thought, and raised her glass. She took a long bath after dinner in the oversized tub Michael had put in for them himself. She wasn't ready for bed when she finished. It was too early. So she put on some sweatpants and the University of New Haven t-shirt Emma had gotten her on her official visit there, and went downstairs and then out into the backyard to see if there were fireflies tonight, and to look up into the stars. She'd always loved this time of night, darkness having just fallen, as if God had pulled down a shade. There were fireflies tonight. As always, the sight of them, the existence of them, made her as happy as she had been chasing them around the yard when she was a little girl. But am I happy? She knew that her job, all the new responsibilities that came with being deputy chief, made her happy, gave her purpose, beyond being a wife and mother, more of a purpose than she'd ever had in her life. They had a murder investigation now, a mystery to solve. And even though Jesse was the one in charge, she knew her contribution was essential, like she was crewing for him. She still couldn't shake the thought that somehow the two shootings, Paul Hutton and the attempt on Jesse's life, might somehow be connected. During her lunch break today, she had driven over to Jesse's and walked up and down his street, finally following the path the shooter would have taken to the beach if he'd been running for the beach. Maybe they'd missed something, when they'd all walked along the water the next morning, even knowing that the storm had likely washed away footprints or anything else. Jesse was the one who always said to rely on yourself with cases like these. Trust that you might see something nobody else did. But she hadn't seen anything resembling a clue. All she saw now, in the night, head tilted back, were the stars. Then, she was being grabbed from behind. A hand clamped over her mouth, and in a blink she was on the ground, and he was on top of her. Molly tried to twist loose, but she was on her stomach, and she could feel the full weight of him on her. All the air coming out of her at once, as she could feel his free hand start to pull down her sweatpants. Her gun was in her purse, on the table in the front hall, in the empty house. She tried to scream and couldn't. She could barely breathe. She tried to bite his hand, but couldn't get her mouth open. I cannot let this happen. Not to me. I will not let this happen. How do you like it, bitch? He said into her ear. She kept trying to twist away, to get out from under him, as she tried to keep her legs pressed together at the same time. The sweatpants were at her knees now. She could feel him fumbling with his own pants. Bitch, he said again. He took his hand away from her mouth just long enough to punch her hard on the side of her head, dazing her. Then he hit her again, with even more force behind the blow the second time, and Molly thought she might go out. But as he hit her, Marley managed to get her right hand out from beneath her. She started to slap at him with her free hand, but her blows had nothing behind them. It was when her right hand fell back into the grass near her new rose bushes that she felt the trowel that she'd forgotten to bring inside after gardening the day before. Molly gripped the handle as he pressed her face into the wet grass. Now! She used what strength she had and stabbed him in the leg with the pointed end of the trowel. Then, again! She heard him cry out in pain. He tried to reach for her hand, but as he did, Molly rolled out from underneath him, a few feet away, trying to get to her feet. He was trying to do the same. He was wearing some kind of black windbreaker, a black ski mask. They faced each other, Molly whipping the trowel in front of her, wanting to call out so one of her neighbors might hear, but no sound came out of her at first. Finally, she screamed, "Someone! Help me!" Chest heaving, eyes on her attacker, backing away from him. "Someone! Call 911!" The guy was pulling his jeans up when he heard voices from next door. Then they both saw lights splashing across the backyard next to Molly's. The Thompsons. The guy turned and ran toward the low white picket fence, nearly going down as he caught his trailing leg jumping over it. Molly ran back inside the house, grabbed her gun from the bottom of her purse. As she ran across the yard, she saw Jack Thompson coming through the hedges with a baseball bat. "Guy tried to rape me," Molly shouted as she ran past Jack Thompson. "I'm going after him." Then she was over the fence in her bare feet, chasing the bastard, even though it was too late. He'd had too much lead time and was gone. Molly kept running anyway, across one yard and then the one next to it, until she was in the street and could hear the first sirens in the distance. Like Jesse had said, stupid courage.